Health and Human Services Budget Division will come to order. Today we're going to begin an overview of the governor's budget recommendations, and we'll begin with the Department of Health. Greg Acom, Assistant Commissioner of Health, will come with Barb Julek.
Good morning, Madam Chair. And I would say good morning to the members of the committee, though they must be a little late this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present the Department of Health's budget recommendations this morning. I'm Craig Acom. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Health. And with me is Barb Julek, our Chief Financial Officer. We have some change pages to go through, but before Ms. Julek goes through those, I'd just like to present some context for these reductions, and I'm sure this is context that needs no introduction. These are unprecedented times for challenging our state budget, and under normal times, the Department of Health wouldn't be considering any of these reductions, and these reductions are not a reflection of a program's importance or effectiveness, but frankly, the department was charged with making recommendations to reduce its budget to within the operating targets presented as part of this budget balancing exercise. And these are our best recommendations within the framework that we were asked to work within. And in that, we did strive to ensure our core public health services, our long-term projects, and also to protect our federal match and MOE requirements. And as you know, the Department of Health operates about 60% of its programs on federal funding. And that match and MOE requirement provided by the state is very important to our continued operations. And so with that context, I think what I'd like to do is ask Ms. Julek to walk through the change pages, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, as stated, my name is Barb Julek, Minnesota Department of Health. You should all have in your packet two-sided copies of the change pages from the Department of Health, and I'll start with the first one, grant reduction. The governor is recommending grant reductions to four grants listed on this page, and I'll just go through them one at a time. The first one is to the Rural Hospital Capital Improvement Grants. This change is more of a shift than a reduction. Currently, we have appropriated per year $1,755,000 for this program. These awards are typically awarded in March. This proposal would just move that award to July of fiscal 11 for a one-time savings in fiscal 10 of that $1.7 million. The next change would be for the Federally Qualified Health Center grants. Currently, we have appropriated to us $2.5 million out of the Healthcare Access Fund in fiscal year 10 and 11. This was an increase from the original base based on the Healthcare Reform Act passed 2 years ago. Originally, these grants were $1.5 million. This proposal would bring the grants for fiscal 11 back to that $1.5 million level, saving $1 million one time in fiscal 11 in the Healthcare Access Fund.
And is the savings that your budget proposes to take in the Healthcare Access Fund then being transferred to the general fund?
Madam Chair, while we can't speak to the overall budget strategy used by the governor's office and MMB, it would be our assumption that this would offset any transfers required to the Healthcare Access Fund as a result of projected shortfalls in the account.
Madam Chair, the next change would be to the statewide health improvement program. The department has one-time appropriations of $20 million in fiscal year 10 and $27 million in fiscal 11. This proposal would reduce the fiscal 11 grants by $10 million. And as you know, these grants go to community health boards and tribal governments to create policies and environments to promote healthy behaviors. And these are one-time fundings, and so this would be a one-time saving, again, to the Healthcare Access Fund.
And my understanding is that these grants have already been awarded.
Madam Chair, there would have to be contract amendments.
Just did So you'd go back and tell communities that have already received the award and are expecting the money that they would...
Well, Madam Chair, if I could correct myself, these are fiscal 11 savings, so I'd have to verify what our contracts say and could get back to you if there would need to be amendments or not. I'm not sure how the contracts have been awarded.
I think the law also asks the Department of Health to recommend sources of future funding for this program. Has that happened yet?
Madam Chair, the department was asked by the legislature to provide a report on the SHIP program, which we have provided. We've made available to you and other committee chairs, the public, and it's currently on our website.
And did you recommend a future source of funding for this program?
Well, Madam Chair, we provided three options, understanding that the department has neither the ability nor legal standing to provide recommendations on future funding. But we did provide three options in the report, and we'd be happy to come back and talk about those.
Well, you do have authority to make recommendations. You're making recommendations on the budget right now.
Well, Madam Chair, this is the governor's recommended budget, supplemental budget, and so we're presenting our share of that.
All right, well, let's go on then.
Madam Chair, the last grant reduction change found on the backside of the first page is to medical education grants. Currently, the department has dedicated cigarette tax funding that provides direct grants to the University of Minnesota, University Medical Center Fairview, University School of Dentistry, and the Academic Health Center. This proposal would be to reduce that dedicated revenue to the department by $1 million in fiscal year 10 and $1.5 million in fiscal 11, and then subsequently reduce the grants to those three entities to achieve that $1.5 million of savings. Because we do get federal match on the Fairview grant, and because of the current enhanced federal match, the actual grant reductions would be somewhere between $1.7 and $1.8 million, taking into account the federal money.
Are there any questions on this budget page? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, on the reductions that are being proposed to Merck, in a situation like this, how can we best communicate this to other jurisdictions that might be interested in this? And I'm thinking particularly of Senator Pappas in higher education. So as she's working through her budget pages, she has the full information available to her.
Is this a question for me? I don't know. You're on the division, so I guess you could tell her about it.
Madam Chair, Mr. Acom, it would be helpful, I think, particularly on the Merck initiative, if that information can be shared with the chair of the Higher Ed Finance Division, Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, we'd be happy to provide that. I would also point out that DHS will be also presenting a Merck proposal in their budget overview. And a reminder to them to do the same would be appreciated.
Any other questions about this budget page? Yes.
This is more orienting me to this. This is dedicated cigarette tax funds that we're talking about. So this is money that the state receives because of its success in dealing with issues around the consequences of to the tobacco company for, or what is the dedication portion of it is what I'm interested in. If we're going to take it, then it's not dedicated. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, it is a dedicated income source, but it's a cigarette tax.
Okay.
It's dedicated in statute, and so it's not part of the efforts that went on before with the tobacco settlement, and so the legislature has the authority to move that funding, and the governor is recommending that happens.
Senator. Berglund. And so what does dedicated mean then?
Madam Chair, I believe the statute references 297F, where it basically states that $8.5 million of cigarette tax money is dedicated to the Department of Health for the purposes of medical education. So it just means the money comes to the Department of Health in a special revenue fund versus just being deposited into the general fund for any purpose.
And so if it doesn't go for that dedicated purpose, where will it be spent?
It would be diverted back to the general fund, Madam Chair.
So it can be for non-health-related purposes.
Well, in this case, it'd be going to reduce the budget deficit.
And Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, the majority of the current cigarette tax goes into the general fund for general fund purposes.
Any other questions? Why don't we go on then?
Okay, Madam Chair, moving on to grant eliminations. The governor is proposing elimination of two grants for the Department of Health. The first is the donated dental grant. This is a $63,000 annual grant that goes to the Minnesota Dental Association, and it covers their administrative cost of operating a donated dental program. This funding is not used to provide any direct dental services. Again, it's for their administrative costs, and these funds are from the Healthcare Access Fund, so this reduction would take place in fiscal year 11. The second grant elimination would be to the lead-based program. The department currently receives $25,000 a year in annual grants for a lead-based program that offers temporary relocation of families to safe housing while lead abatement is taking place. Currently, local grantees receive federal funding to do the same activity, and the current state appropriation just supplements that activity, and the governor's proposing to eliminate that effective this fiscal year.
Any questions about this page? Let's go on then.
Madam Chair, members, the next page is the administrative reduction page. The governor is recommending a 3% operating budget reduction for the Healthcare Access Fund and the General Fund. The numbers on the page represent just a 3% reduction of what's remaining in fiscal 10 and 11, and then an ongoing reduction for 12 and 13. The governor has also recommended an additional 3% operating reduction that has yet to be allocated to agencies, and it's not clear how much would fall into the Department of Health, so that is not reflected here. But I can talk about the first 3%.
I didn't understand what you said. The governor has some cuts that aren't in his budget?
No, the governor, Madam Chair, members, there's kind of a two-step administrative reduction in the governor's budget. The first you'll find directly related to each agency, reflecting a 3% operating reduction, and that's what's on this page. The governor is further recommending an additional 3% operating reduction, which they will try to achieve through savings of information technology, technology contracts, potentially space, rent, and once.
But in fairness, Madam Chair, we haven't been fully briefed on the governor's plan on how to achieve that additional 3% savings across all state agencies. But I think it's the governor's intent to try to achieve those savings through system-wide efficiencies across all state agencies and then allocate the difference out to agencies in the event that the 3% target isn't reached.
So, Mr. Acomb, will there be a budget page for this additional 3%, and will it be appearing in our budget book or somebody else's?
Madam Chair, members, it would be in the state government budget page. It's listed under our Minnesota Management and Budgets items.
I see. And can you break out how much of this is Healthcare Access Fund?
Yes, Madam Chair, at the top of the page, you'll see three lines. The first line, starting with the $612,000, the $401,000, that's general funds. Second line, $431,000, $278,000 is Healthcare Access Fund. And the third line, the $1.3 million and the $722,000 is state government special revenue. And I can go into a little detail on each of these.
Any other questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a general question, but as we go through these pages, is there a reflection when we have a proposed cut of our state budget? Is there a number that also would show if and when there is a loss of federal dollars that would list those dollars as well so that we could have that information?
Madam Chair, as at this, for the Department of Health, we would not have the one page we did have a loss of federal dollars was the Merck budget cut. It's not listed on the page, but I can get detail to the committee on how much that would be, but it would be about $300,000. But other than that, for the Department of Health, we're not assuming any other federal revenue loss at this time.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Madam Chair, thank you. This is a financial question, again, just sort of a general question. And we hear this around the Capitol a lot, and people talk about how fast the budget is growing. And I just wondered, as long as the officials are here, we can have some kind of statement from them. We've been told several times, or at least discussed, that if the growth trend continues in the Department of Health as it is right now, and then the impact of the age wave coming up, I've heard that the Department of Health budget is going to overtake the size of the entire general fund at some point. Could you speak to that, and what kind of projections are we talking about here?
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes, I believe those discussions often refer to the Department of Human Services, who runs the state-managed health care programs. The cost of health care in general has often been quoted as saying it's rising at a rate of 9% per year, where inflation is more like 1 or 2%. And so it is the fastest, as a percentage, it's health care overall is the fastest growing segment of the state budget. As in terms of how projections of the department's budget, I would have to defer. It isn't the Department of Health. I would have to refer those questions to the Department of Human Services to answer in their forecasting unit.
So, to follow up, Madam Chair, so within your department, you're not looking at growth trends?
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes, while we do have a health economics unit, which has certainly testified before this committee previously, you know, we don't directly manage that. We have, however, undertaken an effort since 2008 to work on health reform activities, and it's our hope and goal of those activities to bring down the overall cost curve of health care in Minnesota by bringing more transparency, quality, provider access, you know, as part of those efforts.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions on this page? All right, let's go on then.
Madam Chair, members, the next page is a federal compliance budget page relating to e-health, and this the governor is recommending a state government special revenue appropriation offset by fees to help support the Health Information Exchange Oversight Board that would be created in proposed legislation, and the fees to organizations providing health information exchange services would support those costs. The Oversight Board would be needed to help us meet our federal requirements regarding the e-health initiatives and the high-tech American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and I suppose I could go with this. And I think if you have any questions on that,
Madam Chair.
Well, how much are the fees going to be?
Madam Chair, the fees are set to establish and certify health information exchanges. Those fees, I don't have the language right in front of me, but we'll be presenting language for the fees at a future. A future hearing. But in essence, this is to bring about an infrastructure to allow the state to capture its maximum share of a federal stimulus initiative that was meant around health information technology. And part of that is that health providers in the state of Minnesota are encouraged to use electronic health records. And to do that, they need to have a means to provide meaningful use and exchange of the information. This will help establish a framework for that exchange mechanism in the state, and to ensure consumer protections and efficiency and compliance.
How did you arrive at the dollar amount that you would generate?
I'm sure we did establish some fees. Maybe Dr. Golden would be able to talk about that.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Jim Golden, the Division Director for Health Policy. Madam Chair, this activity and the oversight board that would be funded by this activity were recommendations that came out of the eHealth Advisory Committee and stakeholder work groups that were specifically looking at what type of oversight would ensure that health information was able to follow the patient and we didn't have silos of information. The amount that was arrived at was by taking a look at what activities the oversight board would need to provide, and then by looking at those activities, dividing them simply among the organizations that would be providing health information exchange services. So we took a look. It creates a board. The board takes a look at what it needs for funding. The funding is approximately $135,000 per year. And then it divides that among those organizations that are being overseen.
So I guess another way to get to the answer is how many organizations are there?
Madam Chair, committee members, at this point we're not entirely sure how many would choose to do this. We anticipate approximately seven.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Agham, I'm a little confused. We heard testimony in health policy yesterday on the recently received federal grant, and the question was specifically posed about what it is, if anything, that was needed from the legislature in order that we can move forward with the with this federal grant. And my recollection was that we had state appropriations that were being linked up with the federal grant, and in essence, that there was nothing additional that was needed. And I don't remember any discussion about the creation of this new board. I wonder if you could help to me to understand.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, yesterday in Senator Marty's committee, there was a discussion of two specific programs that are coming out of HHS at the federal level. One is the Regional Extension Centers, which is the REACH program. That was the discussion by Stratus Health, the Key Health, and the Key Health Alliance. They did receive $19 million to provide technical assistance for the adoption and use of electronic health records. And so they will be using that to provide technical assistance primarily to the primary care organizations within the state. The second proposal that was heard and discussed in Senator Marty's committee was one of four applications that the state of Minnesota submitted for the Beacon program. That was submitted by the Provider Coalition in an effort to develop the VA's VISTA system to be an open source electronic health record. What this proposal is dealing with is yet a third proposal that was awarded last Friday out of Health and Human Services at the federal level. The state will be receiving $9.6 million to help facilitate health information exchange. And what we do with that money is help to develop the infrastructure. Some of the funds from that program will be able to offset some of the costs of initially setting up and developing the oversight board. But in order to do this on a long-term basis, the federal government, as part of that grant, requires that we have ongoing oversight and coordination of health information exchange in Minnesota. And this provides that long-term oversight.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering about, you know, if we have the language for the proposal of creating this board so that we could look at who's appointing the board members, who's overseeing the board, you know, basically does the legislature have any involvement in this? And the reason why, in my opinion, this is important just in one particular, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of reasons why it could be important, but I've worked with the hospital association and others over the last year talking about access to medical records, and there are some data practices issues and some cost issues for making sure these systems are set up in a way that people will have as inexpensive access to their medical records as possible. As these systems are developed, we understand the first priority for the development is for medical purposes, but there are other public policy issues involved too. So I would like to know more detail about how this board is structured and under whose authority it's operating.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we'll be forwarding that language as part of the overall budget bill language. And so
and that will go through policy committees,
right,
as well. So is the renewal fee going to be the same as the original certification fee?
Madam Chair, the way that the language is set up, there's a one-time application fee, and then there's an ongoing annual fee.
No, the question was, would they be the same?
No, the first-year fee would be higher because there's an initial application. A renewal would be less expensive.
And so how much would those fees be, do you anticipate?
Madam Chair, depending on the type of exchange organization, I believe that they are between $10,000 and $20,000 per organization.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Pretner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Dr. Golden, when you were in my office yesterday, you mentioned that with the MNHI proposal that there was a $20 million investment that they were making into it. And how does that fit with these fees? Is that to support the board's coordination also, or is that for infrastructure, or what is that money going for?
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon, two-thirds of the federal funding will go to actually build infrastructure. And so this is actually to build the electronic network and to help providers connect to that electronic network in a secure way that allows the exchange of health information between healthcare providers and hospitals.
But Madam Chair and Dr. Golden, and the discussion we had also yesterday was how difficult it is for particularly these small rural facilities to implement the electronic record. And I'm just wondering if fixing a $20,000 per year fee on them isn't going to be exorbitant.
Well, it's on a bigger organization. It's not on each individual physician's office.
Correct, Madam Chair and Senator Pretner-Solon. This proposal is really meant to establish an infrastructure of health information exchange providers. And so individual healthcare providers and institutions would make use of these exchanges in order to transfer data between themselves. But they would not have the fee apply to them, only the establishment, regulation, and oversight of those information exchanges would be part of this proposal.
Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Okay, let's go on then.
Madam Chair, the next page contains two clarifications on our other fee programs. The first has to deal with youth camps. Last year, if you recall, we established a youth camp licensing fee. But this year, we need to clarify that if the youth camp is also being licensed as a food and lodging facility, that they would only have to pay one of those fees. And so this is making sure they're not paying twice. The second item has to do with manufactured home parks and recreational camping areas. Very similar that they would only, just clarifying that if they fall under two separate types of licensing, that we'd only apply one licensing base fee and not both. So they're clarifying language.
Any questions on this page? Let's go on.
Madam Chair, the last page we have, The next page is another clarification. In the 2008 healthcare reform, there was language provided that allowed for appropriations for certain healthcare reform activities to be available until spent. Just due to a technical issue, that rider expires, therefore that language expires, and this proposal would just reinstate that language to make the funding available until spent without a rider, basically reestablishing the rider so it doesn't expire.
And how long are you anticipating these funds will last before they're expended?
Madam Chair, we would expect that they would be fully expended by the end of next biennium.
Any other questions on this page? Okay.
Madam Chair, members, the last page is the unallotment page. The governor's budget recommends continuing the unallotments for fiscal year 11 into the base. So this page just outlines the unallotments that took effect last summer and then proposes continuing the 11 unallotments as an ongoing. So this would include the elimination of the Office of Unlicensed Complementary and Alternative Healthcare Practices at $74,000 a year. It would include a redesign of the Minnesota Children Health Special Needs, which would save $355,000 a year. It includes some activities under environmental health services, some of which have already moved into the state government special revenue fund. And it would also include creating some efficiencies in our administrative services at the district office. So this just continues beyond fiscal 11, the unallotments that took place.
Are there questions about this page? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Julich, on item number three, the narrative indicates that this includes delay of hiring certain vacancies, reprioritizing of non-critical activities, and temporary refinancing of activities. It might be helpful if we could have further information on those non-critical activities, what are deemed as non-critical activities, and what more detail on the temporary refinancing of activities.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, these were changes as part of the unallotment in our current year. These are not part of the unallotment continuation that the governor is proposing. They were one-time savings that generally reflected the department's complete shift to H1N1 response over the summer and into the fall, and the influx therein of some federal dollars that help support that effort for both our agency and our partners. And so because of that change in funding, we stopped certain activities to make sure that we were able to respond to H1N1, and we were able to shift funding that normally might have been in the general fund onto that federal response funding to respond to the emergency.
Madam.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aikman, thanks for the explanation. I think that's really helpful. And as we work through these challenges, I think particularly when there are things that are that we are deeming as non-critical or things that we are no longer able to support, particularly with regard to the Department of Health, I think we need to be very clear on what those activities are so that this body and the public has that information.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, I would say that probably the phrase non-critical might have been an error. Less critical might be a more important or more better way of categorizing this. But I would also call your attention to the administrative reduction change page, and in that we lay out where we think we'll have to make some reductions in our activities going forward. Obviously, H1N1, we hope, was a one-time event. Moving forward within this budget framework and these targets, will certainly mean some reductions in the activities our department is facing. And I wouldn't characterize any of them as non-critical, but I would just say that, you know, in the matter of making choices, difficult choices, there are more critical and less critical choices.
Mr. Ecom, what I don't understand under number three is the 2011 shows a zero.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
I mean, if we're ratifying these for the next biennium, wouldn't we be ratifying?
I think that the governor's full unallotment choices, decisions for the Department of Health are shown here for your reference. And they're clearly shown in categories for fiscal year 10 and 11. But since there was no reduction in number three for 11, that's not part of what the governor is recommending to carry forward into 12 and 13.
And Madam Chair, what the governor is recommending is an ongoing 3% reduction. And that's what's reflected on the administrative budget page.
So these are not on top of each other?
It would be on top of the Madam Chair, the 3% reduction would be on top of the $525,000, which is listed in the fiscal year 11. Those are also operating reductions. So that includes the complementary and alternative health care practices office, activities we do around the mission program, and the other items listed. So the 525 represents a 2.25% reduction of our administrative base. And on top of that would be another 3%, and this is all on top of the 8% that was from last year's legislative session.
And then the governor is also proposing another 3% to all agencies. So
16% reduction, 70%.
These are significant cuts to the Department of Health.
And since the unallotment of the Office of Unlicensed and Complementary and Alternative Health, how are those complaints being dealt with?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I can answer that for you today, but we'd be happy to provide that information to you.
Senator Pradner, someone?
Madam Chair, Mr. Ecom, or Assistant Commissioner Ecom, so there's a 3% cut to the agencies and then a second 3% cut to the agencies. How much does that amount to? The 6% cut to the agency.
Madam Chair, Senator Pritner-Solon, do you have that?
Madam Chair, for the Department of Health, a 3% general fund administrative cut going out is about $680,000 per year in the general fund. The additional 3% statewide is $9 million. How much of that would be allocated back to the Department of Health is unknown right now, but it would be no more than another $680,000.
Okay.
Any other questions about this page? Okay.
Madam Chair, that concludes the Department of Health's budget presentation. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Are there any remaining questions for the Department of Health? I guess not. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're going to do overview of the boards of health, different behavioral health and other boards. We're going to have an overview by Lorraine Mickelson to kind of give us a background for all the boards. Department of Human Services was not ready today, so we're glad you are.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Laurie Mickelson. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Optometry and the Board of Dietetics and Nutrition Practice. I have been asked by our group of health licensing boards to just, in context, remind you that we are special revenue fund agencies, and that expenses of the board are covered totally through fees that are collected by the licensees that we regulate. We currently receive no general fund dollars. You should have a document in your packet that summarizes the different areas that the health licensing boards have used to accomplish the requested 3% reduction in unspent funds. And as each additional executive director comes forward, they will be explaining their specific impacts to their agency budgets.
Do we have it?
Thank you.
We do not have this.
We have materials. I don't know if they got put into your book. We just received them this morning, and so.
Okay.
So it looks like.
Well, it's relatively new. That's the professional counselor. I think.
Madam Chair.
I'm not sure that these are in the order that our agenda appears either, so I apologize. It looks like the first one is the Board of Social Work.
Madam Chair, committee members, are there any questions regarding the overview that I provided? Otherwise, I'll defer to the individual board executive directors.
Yeah, I think that's the point that we're at.
Okay, thank you.
No, I want to know what the impact is.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair. Maybe they could just tell us which ones they're talking about as we go along, because there's just a pack. Which pages? Because it's just a pack without any headings on it. And
well, it doesn't have pages either.
Well, maybe numbers. If they just even start with what's the top of the page or something so that we have some idea.
Well, the first part here is kind of an overall.
Yeah.
You have a page that looks like this, which I think is a sort of a summary page. Very hard to read. And then you come to one that's a state board of social work.
And Madam Chair, I'd like some idea of who's putting these together. I mean, because there's just no information on these. And
well, I think the overview we just had was in regard to these first pages. But I'm not sure.
In this area will delay mail.
So we can do it two ways. We can kind of go through the packet and figure out the order they're in and get people that way and not worry about the order on the agenda, or we can take the order on the agenda and try and find the pages in the pack. I was going to try and do the order there in the packet.
Whichever you prefer, Madam Chair. I just when we start talking about something in particular, I just like to know which. I can go out of order. It's up to you, Madam Chair, but I just want to know.
Why don't you go ahead?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am not from the Board of Social Work. I'm the next agenda item, Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy.
Okay, well, maybe you can help us find your page then. What does it look like?
Okay, the pages that I have received, the heading is the Governor's 2010 Supplemental Budget Recommendations, and at the bottom, pages 3 and 4 of 20.
We don't have numbers on our page.
You don't.
So. Okay. You need to hold it up so we can see what it looks like.
We don't have that.
Okay. Do you have a? do you have a spreadsheet that looks like this?
Yes, we have a spreadsheet that looks like that, but you can hardly read the darn thing.
And could you give me some, Madam Chair, some idea who put that together, just so that we have that information?
I don't know who put it together.
Well, that, and Madam Chair, that's kind of what I was, if there's some idea.
My name is Julie Vangs, and I'm the accounting coordinator for all the health boards. The information that you received in front of you, we received an email that, or just a suggestion to send you documentation that we had used in gathering all of our data to put together detailed information by board that was submitted to the Department of Management and Budget that resulted in what the governor's budget cuts are for each of the boards. And maybe out of the packet that they printed for you this morning, the easiest thing to look at would be a worksheet that looks like this. It's three different pages. And what it does is it identifies exactly the same numbers that were included in what the governor's budget pages were. We did not have individual supplemental budgets at all prepared for any of the boards. We just did a matter of an exercise on these worksheets, and that's all that was submitted.
We don't have that sheet, so
we don't have the governor's. I just printed this off of the website this morning.
Well, it's not in not in the packet that was given to us. If you want to give it to our staff, we can go make some copies now.
Okay.
Just for committee members. So does this mean we're not going to receive change pages for each board?
There are no change pages, Madam Chair. Basically, what we're here to do is just explain to you what the 3% cuts and how they will affect each board individually. We don't have any change document or anything that was submitted. It was just a matter of what is the 3% for fiscal year 10 of all unallotted dollars, and then the 3% cuts out of our base budgets for fiscal year 11. And then what we've done is identified by board what those totals are, and then by line item how it would affect each of the boards.
So is that what this sheet is?
Yes. That one explains by board line-by-line detail.
The numbers are way too big for that to be what it is.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
All right, Senator Coring, might as well.
I guess the question that I have is I know that in years past, the administration, if there was money in some of these different boards, like the reserve
Ask it as
money,
point.
That money was taken away. Is all of that money, I'm assuming all that money's gone, and so there's no taking of that away from different boards now, is there? Is that happening in this supplemental budget?
Madam Chair and representatives, the 3% cut is out of our current base budgets. The money that you're talking about is probably that accumulative balance that is our fund balance of money that's left over each year. In fiscal year 11, $6 million will be transferred to the general fund, and that will bring the balance down at the end of fiscal year 11 to around $3.5 million. These cuts here are going to be on top of that transfer. They're just the 3% out of our current base budget, and then the unexpended dollars in fiscal year 10 of our current base budget.
And then, Madam Chair, another question. So when we... when we're collecting for different boards, for different fees, and that money is put into the pot, and then if by chance that money is all taken away, then is that money ever restored back to these different boards? I see a no. So then what happens then when boards probably had a reserve, and then all of a sudden now they don't have any money and being able to catch up again, then the board has to raise their fee again when they actually probably had a reserve at one time.
This is the total of this.
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, what happens is as soon as the fund balances are transferred out of our fund, what it does is it results in all of the boards sitting down because they no longer have sufficient revenue coming in to cover their current expenditures or whatever was there that they relied on to cover legal cost activities. Whenever contested cases come up, the money then is gone. So it will result in boards needing to increase fees to have sufficient revenues coming in to cover all those expenditures of the current appropriations plus any unexpected legal costs that come in.
So all this sheet seems to tell us is expenditures of the of each board. It doesn't tell us what you've been asked to do in relationship to the budget. Is there a page that tells us that?
That those totals that you have in front of you are what our 3% cuts are. So if you were to look for just at the Board of Medical Practice, the 3% cut for them is going to amount to the $73,000 in 10 and the $112,000 in 11.
Where's that? 73
here.
Okay. And these numbers are where they're choosing to make their reductions?
Exactly. This will give us, in order for us to actually sit down to see where we have funds available, because we only have one operational account that we do our business out of. We've tried to line item exactly how the cuts would come and what boards would have to do to make those changes within their agencies. And you can see in the second year, in fiscal year 11, the salary line is the only line that we have available to make cuts at, so it will result in us cutting back in staffing.
Okay, so I think I understand this sheet well enough now so that we could proceed. Are there other questions about the sheet, Senator Pretner-Sullivan?
Madam Chair, I would like to respond to a question about what happens when there's an assessment made against the board. Because I've been in this situation. I pay a $500 fee for my license every 2 years. And when there is an assessment made or the cuts are come off of this, the board needs to make that up. So I get assessed. I personally get assessed, and I have in previous years, $160 that I have to pay before I can, plus my $500, that I have to pay before I can get my license for the next biennium. And I think this is the most outrageous cut that I've ever seen. I mean, these are professionals that are paying to have their license, and it's required by the state that they be regulated. We're already paying for the operation and the oversight of that regulation. On top of that, they're all health providers, so they're already getting cuts through the 3% provider cuts and all the other cuts that are coming down the line. I'm just wondering what kind of a job driver this is, or an economic development driver this is. This is just squashing our opportunity to be to practice here in our state.
Other questions, Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if there were other cuts that were not listed on this sheet, because I do have the governor's recs. And on the behavioral health, this, that was the first one that we were talking about, it adds up to about 20 million, and on the governor's recommendations, it's 23. So is there some other place where you would be reducing the budget that would not be on this spreadsheet?
Madam Chair, I think on the governor's recommendation sheet that you have in front of you, the 23 is actually for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. It's the end of the behavioral health and therapy that is on the previous page. Is that the sheet that you see there?
Yes, you're right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Where are you looking, Julie?
All right. Well, I think we can, between this packet and this sheet, start hearing from the individual boards. And why don't we start with the Behavioral Health and Therapy Board, since that's the first one on this packet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Rexigal, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. And if I may, I'd like to provide context and some background for this latest budget cut. This board was created in 2003, and we regulate professional counselors and alcohol and drug counselors. And similar to the other health licensing boards, we're, of course, funded through fees paid by our applicants and licensees, which are deposited in the special revenue fund. This board has struggled with program debt and inadequate staffing since it was created in 2003. The debt due in large part to fewer licensees than projected when both licenses were created, and startup costs for office supplies, equipment, et cetera. In 2005, we began regulating alcohol and drug counselors. That program was transferred from the Department of Health. And along with them came $1 million debt that our licensees pay off through a surcharge. Every time they apply for a license or a renewal, it's a $99 surcharge on top of the fee to recover that program debt. In 2007, the board's base budget was cut by 41.5%. Fees were increased that year, new fees were created, and the staff was cut from 5 to 3. So this board took its biggest hit in 2007, and we've sort of been living in discomfort ever since, you might say. Then in 2008, 22.8% of our budget, $90,000, was transferred to the general fund to fund other programs. And so now it's 2010 and another 3% is coming up. We have been able to identify where we're going to cut expenses without cutting staff. So I guess that's good news for us, but you know, it's just very difficult. The effect of all of this when funds are taken is customer service. People are shocked, actually, when we answer the phone. You know, we don't have anybody sitting at our front desk. We've automated as much as we can. I don't know what else to tell you, except we will continue to do the best job we can with the limited staff and resources that we have.
Are there any questions? Okay, thank you very much. The Chiropractors Board. Larry Spicer.
My name is Julie Vangsness, and I will present his budget. He is unable to attend today. The Board of Chiropractic Examiners, their cut ends up being $9,000 in fiscal year 10 and $14,000 in fiscal year 11. And the way that they're going to be able to achieve that goal is by changing practices within their board. They will be cutting back on communications by mailing out postcards to their licensees to have them go online to renew as opposed to mailing out any packets. They've converted their old phone system to the IP phones to save money. They're also going to take some cuts in in-state travel, which amounts to holding less complaint review meetings and board meetings so that the reimbursement to the board members is lower. Equipment, they will no longer be able to replace their equipment. We'll have to maintain old, outdated equipment and computers for probably several more years than what our plan was. And salaries in the second year. Currently, or 2 years ago when their budgets were maintained, they eliminated a full-time position and brought in a part-time position. And now that part-time position will end up reducing that again. This board operates with 4.6 staff, and we'll be reducing that down to about 4.3 or 4.4 staff. Are there any questions?
Questions? I guess not. the dentistry board?
Morning, Madam Chair. I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry, and just want to quickly review with you some of the anticipated impacts of the 3% cut, both for fiscal year 10 and 11. We expect a reduction in services across the board. There, in order to be able to continue providing services, obviously things will need to be prioritized, and that will mean that we are moving staff to certain areas that they're going to be needed in order to provide operations. And as you heard earlier, that means less customer service. There will be delays in processing applications, which will mean that the dentists, hygienists, dental assistants, and dental therapists that we regulate will be unable to practice their professions within a reasonable time after submitting their applications. And which will affect their careers and access to dental services throughout the state. We'll be looking at complaint resolution and delays in that in responding, investigating, and resolving complaints that we receive. Delays with regard to professional development, which is a continued competence of the health providers that we regulate, we'll need to reduce the number of continuing education audits that we do, which concerns us because that could allow people who are out of compliance to continue to renew their licenses. And again, the communication and with staff will be reduced. We're looking at paper clips. We're looking at basic support for supplies and equipment that will need to be cut. As you heard earlier, there will be no increases or advances in technology, and in fact the concerns that we have is the technology that we do have with our databases and others, that we won't be able to continue to support upgrades in those. And essentially our board mission, as for all of my colleagues, to protect the public, is put at risk, and that these aren't boards that have extravagances. They are bare bones, and public safety is really threatened by these holdbacks. I have a significant concern also in that, and with this budget cut that we've been looking at cutting expenses only with no recognition of income, and we do have opportunities in our board, and I believe some of the others, to increase the revenue stream that we have, but that does not then get applied to our operations. And as an example of that, just last year we started licensing dental assistants instead of registering them, and that was a great thing to do. What that means is that each of the dental assistants that applies for a license is paying an additional $20 fee for that license, and we're right now not able to afford to order those documents to be printed. The money is coming in. We're getting $90,000 a year in additional revenue off of out of that service. However, we don't have access to those funds, and the things are tight, and they will get tighter. And I do have concern about public safety.
Mr. Schrag, can you just talk about under your area there is a reduction in full-time salary? Can you tell us how many complement your board has and what it will be with this reduction?
we have a staff of 10 regulating over 16,000 people in the state, and the reductions in staffing will have to do with looking at the possibility of moving somebody from a full-time position to a part-time position in the next fiscal year. And the challenges with reductions in staffing is that we end up paying unemployment costs that kind of offset the value of the cut. So it's that's an area where we really don't want to move, and the additional burden on other employees for picking up those responsibilities is significant in a small agency.
So I didn't hear you. You'd be at 9. What?
Moving it down to moving that to a half-time person would be 9.5 then.
Any other questions? Yeah, Senator Coring.
This is kind of more of a statement, I guess. I'm not following this where I understand it, but okay, so people are paying, in the Board of Dentistry, you're managing 16,000 licensees, is that correct? So each one of those people are paying a fee to the board to manage them, and then we're taking money away from you that people are paying the fees.
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, that's correct.
Right? Well, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, that's correct.
I don't know how can, Madam Chair, can I ask a question to the Chair? How can we do that? I mean, if we were taxing them, I could understand that, but they're paying that fee so that they can regulate themselves, and then we're taking the money away from them. That doesn't even... I'm not a lawyer.
I didn't put this budget together, I'm not prepared to answer questions about it.
All right.
Maybe we could get someone from the Department of Administration to come in if we need to do that. Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schrag, and I think I could probably ask this question of any of the boards here today. In one of the narratives that was provided, it looks like this one was from the Board of Social Work, they lay out the impact that has been placed on the Special Revenue Fund on all the boards over time. $3.5 million in 2004-05, over $3 million in 2008, $6 million for 10. I think as we move forward in deliberating these proposals, the extent to which each of the boards can communicate to us the cumulative impact on your boards, I think would be insightful. And I also frankly think that that's good information to share with your members or to remind your members about, because I think what happens sometimes is we're so focused on the immediate problem in front of us, we lose sight of the cumulative effect. And we've had the same conversation, for example, with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And so I just am encouraging all of you to help us remember and be cognizant of the long-term impacts here. And I am, for one, particularly mindful of additional responsibilities that we have placed with some of these boards over time, namely the Board of Dentistry.
Well, I know some of you are disturbed about where this money comes from. I'm disturbed about the fact that it's a one-time deal. And I understand sometimes one-time money can help you get to tail savings that are bigger, but I'm not sure. So far, I haven't seen that much in tail savings that is bigger, so this is somewhat concerning to me that this is only a one-time. Any other questions for the Board of Dentistry? Thank you,
members. Thank you, Chair.
Next, it looks like the Board of Dietetic and Nutrition.
Madam Chair, committee members, once again, my name is Lori Mickelson, and I'm the director for both the Board of Dietetics and Nutrition Practice and the Board of Optometry. So I will speak to both of those in turn. Both of the agencies I administer are small health licensing boards. Each regulate approximately 1,200 licensees on each of those boards. The impact is minimal to my agencies, these two agencies, because our budgets are small, and so the requested 3% reduction is minimal. For dietetics and nutrition practice, specifically in 10, we have determined that reducing the anticipated expenses of outstate travel is where we would take the largest cut. And this is easily done. The Board of Dietetics and Nutrition Practice attends one out-of-state conference every other year. So it was a simple reduction in that line item. In 2011, we're looking at a smaller reduction in outstate travel and still maintaining the services that we're able to give. Going to the Board of Optometry.
Madam Chair, just I'm sorry. Before you go on to the Board of Optometry, okay, it's the $2,000 cut on the out-of-state travel?
In 2010, that's correct, ma'am.
Okay, and then an additional $1,000. Am I looking at this right? I'm trying to. Okay, then it's an additional $1,000 in 11.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator. That's correct, because in the every other year that we attend the conference, 10 is the year that we don't attend, so I could reduce outstate travel greater in 2010. And in 11, I reduced it less because that would be the year that we'd be attending the out-of-state conference.
And Madam Chair, is there anything left? I mean, did you leave money in that budget then, or did you eliminate out-of-state travel?
Madam Chair, Senator, the out-of-state travel is not eliminated totally, just adequately so that we would have perhaps a reduced number attending. We usually have two. We may go to one.
And so, Madam Chair, so there, you probably reduced it by half then, is approximately.
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe that in 10, it's in half. And in 11, it's less than that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So that raises a question in my mind. I'd sort of like to know how much each of these boards has budgeted for out-of-state travel. If we could get that information.
And Madam Chair, as the boards come up, because I've noticed, like, for example, as they come up, psychology has reduced it by 11,000 in 11. And I'm just curious as to how much is left then, or are they reducing it entirely?
No, that's why I want to know what their total out-of-state budget
is. And that's what I'm saying, as they come up, maybe they could be prepared to.
Well, yes. The ones that we've already gone through, we need to get that, though. So,
Madam Chair, I will work with the other health licensing directors to get that information to you. I don't know that. I don't have my initial budget with me, so I cannot give you an accurate assessment of what remains in that particular line item for out-of-state travel. I'd be more than glad to get it to you.
I mean, I just feel like it's a little bit of a stretch for people to get up here and tell us what poor service they're going to give to people, and they are saving money in their out-of-state budget for travel.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon?
In this instance, I'd like to speak on behalf of out-of-state travel, because many of these boards are members of national organizations where they have voting rights, and they have to be there to establish their national legislative priorities. And it's very important to have Minnesota representation at those meetings.
Senator Prettner-Solon, we belong to national organizations also that set national priorities. But we have eliminated our out-of-state travel for legislators to those meetings. Any other questions on the Board of Dietetic and Nutrition? If not, then let's move on to the Optometry Board.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. In optometry, in 2010, the major reduction is in our equipment. We were able to purchase and replace a number of our items in 2009, so that was in an area in 2010 that I felt comfortable reducing our expenditures. In 2011, we're going to reduce more in our computer and system services. We're doing quite a bit of that in 2010, so I felt comfortable in that reduction. Those are the, you know, two major line items for optometry in those two fiscal years that we felt comfortable in reducing those expenses.
Any questions? Senator Erickson-Robes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said you were reducing computer services?
Madam Chair, Senator, not the computer services, just changing programming and doing updates. We'll maintain our online services to our licensees and the general public as they are right now.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair. And actually, that seems the way that we should be moving, actually, is to more online things. So I would just alerted a little bit when you said reducing your computer services, because as a mechanism to save money, many people are moving to online, and one of the other boards said they're sending out fewer actually hard copy mailed packets and doing more online stuff. So I just want to make sure that you weren't reducing the computer outreach to your members and computer services and online information registration streams.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator, that is not what will result from that reduction. We are doing a number of enhancements in 2010 that will increase the visibility and availability of online services.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have the Disability Council. Maybe they're not here today. Okay. All right. Next is the Emergency Medical Services Board.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Burkmore, and I'm the Executive Director of the EMS Regulatory Board. And I would ask the committee, there are two totally different items in the budget, in the governor's budget, regarding the EMS Regulatory Board. One has to do with a $450,000 cut that we took last year due to a drafting error, which was nearly 25% of my budget. And my budget initiative was to try to restore that $450,000. And the other part is the 3 and 6% reductions for the coming fiscal years. Shall I start with the $450,000? If someone could, I'm sorry I didn't get these to anybody earlier, but this would show how the $450,000 was split between the programs that the agency funded.
And this board is funded with general fund money.
Correct. We collect very little in fees, and I can go over fees if you want to know details on that. Yeah. Yes. No, I have one. And I may not have enough for everybody. I printed them off quickly this morning. Out of my budget, I fund 8 regional EMS programs. We reimburse ambulance training programs. More than 75% of personnel in EMS are actually volunteer in Minnesota. And they are required to obviously have initial training, but also have refresher training. And we have programs that will do the refresher training and the initial training for volunteers. And we reimburse those programs for their costs, so the volunteer does not also have to pay out of pocket for their training. That budget was cut
for the we lost $200,000 into it due to the $450,000 drafting error. CALS is a Comprehensive Advanced Life Support. That is funding that goes to programs to train personnel, especially in our rural areas where trauma is not as common as an occurrence as you see in our metro hospitals, to keep them informed and trained, both the physicians, right from EMS to the physicians in those areas, to treat life-threatening emergencies and cardiac arrest. Again, they're not as frequent as event there, so they need ongoing training. So we also fund the CALS program. The longevity program, no funding could be taken from that because it was a statutory. And then from my own operations, $175,000 was reduced from my operations due to the $450,000 drafting error. What we did in EMSRB to deal with the drafting error was a number of things. One position, a data coordinator who works with our ambulance data, was left vacant. I was new at that time. I decided not to fill that position when I first came in. I thought I'd go through the budget cycle and see what my budget was at the end of last year, and obviously I could not sell or fund that position. I also had a metro specialist. Those are folks that do inspections of ambulance services, and they also do investigations of ambulance personnel in case we have to take action. I had the metro specialist, six of them, and they're spread across the state. One is in the metro area, was vacant. Since a quarter of my budget was reduced due to this error, I left that position open for a quarter of the year before we move forward so I could accrue savings. Might have been a little bit risky to fill it at all, but my feeling is that we were not working in the metro, and we were putting people here at risk by not doing inspections, by delaying investigations and not taking action. So, again, I left that position open for a quarter of the year so I'd have that quarter that I lost made up to fund that position. At the same time that that occurred, I had my Southeast specialist take a different position and move on to another agency. I also then left that position open at, again, a quarter of the year, again, delaying investigations there to fund that position. I sublet space in my office. I had extra space. The barber board was created. Coming into the same building, I said, hey, I got a conference room, and I'll move my files out of the way. And they sublet space in our office to help me pay rent. We reduced in-state travel. My specialist must travel. I as an executive director, my feeling is I should be out there as well more often at conferences, meeting with folks, but I did very little travel because there was no in-state money. And when I did, I usually just ate the cost myself because we didn't have any money to do it. Other staff, too, did go over training programs and stuff. We really limited our in-state travel. We just didn't have it. Absolutely no out-state travel. At this point, I have been asked to actually serve on a national organization. That means they can pay for my out-state travel. As long as I pay for it up front, they'll reimburse me. So I'm really pleased with that. I've only been in this position a year, and so having that contact with other people that are in my same role in other states will be very good. I've been on conference calls with them, but really working with them will be very good. So there's a little hope there. That's the EMS, but all of these other programs were really crippled by this error. And so I would urge you to support the reinstatement of the $450,000. I would plan on giving it back to the programs as it was reduced, and hopefully that will make us whole as we move on to the other reductions that are also looming. Questions about the $450,000?
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering, Ms. Moore, are you asking for the $450,000 to be reinstated? Or it says intended cut was $164,000. So was the $450,000 the total cut you had, or was that in addition to the $164,000?
That was in addition to the $164,000. The 5% cut
all agencies took. That was my 5% cut, was $164,000, and the $450,000 was on top of that. So I'm not asking for the $164,000 to be reimbursed or restored, because that was our normal agency cut. It was a $450,000. That actually was an error.
Senator Coring?
Madam Chair, and it's Executive Director.
Yes.
Burke Moore. Is this a board? This is a board,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
This is funded with general fund money.
It is.
Board, yes.
Okay. Because you were saying I and my, so I didn't know if the board makes these decisions, though, right?
Yes, we work
rather
together.
Rather than
yes.
just the executive. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just kind of confused there for a second.
I'm sorry.
Madam.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Burke Moore. Is this, I have two questions. One, is this the first time that this $450,000 issue has been brought to the attention of the division? And likewise, has this concern been articulated to the executive branch?
Madam Chair, Senator, I met with Senator Berglund this summer, and I also met with Representative Huntley this summer. This was not recognized until after the gavel hit. So during session, it literally happened. In fact, I have back in my file an email exchange between myself and John Walls in the House. When I came back, said, it looks to me like that $450,000 that was supposed to come out of the general fund came out of my budget. And I got a response from him saying, no, it's out of the general fund. I said, look again at the final version of the bill. That particular line ended up being at a page break, and that particular line that had it coming out of the general fund was dropped off, and my agency's other budget was right below it. So it really appeared to be an error. There wasn't an intent. There's no language. And I went back and looked at tapes. Did I miss a hearing where this was discussed and intended, and it was not anywhere. Otherwise, the legislature was adjourned at the time that it was recognized. And again, I brought it to both chairs and to the aides. I brought it actually to Dennis and David earlier in the summer.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Lurie.
Yeah, thank you. And Director Burke Moore came to my office as well, and I too dug into this and did discover that it was I carried some legislation that put those numbers in the bill to begin with, and it was really a drafting error that this was dropped. I mean, it totally took all of us by surprise, and I dug in behind it and looked at all of this information, and it really was a drafting error. This money was supposed to be there.
Did they get the increases also then?
The increases. They got these cuts.
Right, but there were some
the programs,
increases also that
the
they
program
were
pieces were in there, yes. And then this was one of the shifts that was done, and a line was missing, as the executive director indicated, and it is a drafting error.
And so how much were the increases?
Ooh, I don't know that I brought that with me.
It was
didn't go to my agency, it went to other programs.
No, I understand that, but how much was it?
Well, the total was $450,000.
So you got a $450,000 increase in program grants, and then you got a $450,000 decrease in operating grants?
The $450,000, excuse me.
Madam Chair, maybe somebody from the Ambulance Association knows the answer or not.
Well, let's see if we can get the agency that administers the money
okay.
to tell us.
I do have it. Excuse me. One was $200,000 went to, I believe, Veterans Affairs to create a veterans paramedic and apprenticeship program. So $200,000 went there. And then the other $250,000 went to the fire marshal's office in the Department of Public Safety for another pilot project, medical response unit reimbursements. So that is where the funding went to Veterans Affairs and to
Department of Public Safety Fire Marshal. I apologize for my memory.
Are there any other questions about this deficiency request?
Madam Chair. I guess.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brickmore, so the volunteer training reimbursement, perhaps you already mentioned that. Did they, the volunteers did not get reimbursed then for their training, or the counties or the city, the municipalities take that up?
How the volunteer training reimbursements happen is they actually turn in their requests and then reimburse them. So we reimburse them to the amount that we have. The good thing about that particular program is that they, if we weren't able to reimburse them, they could come in next year to be reimbursed. But they apply, what? Yeah. Although if it's not restored, we will eventually run out of money and not be able to reimburse everybody who requests. But I did, the full program was not reduced. It ended up with about $160,000.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is a more general question, but it kind of goes to, this is an illustration of it. If this is, this was just a drafting error in the number falling off a particular piece of legislation, wouldn't that then mean that the money was still there, kind of left behind in the general budget if it was accounted for? And if that's the case, don't we have the authority within the legislative branch where something can clearly be shown to be simply a drafting area to do any cleanup after the fact? Maybe we don't. And so that's one question. And then the second question I have is, isn't there the ability within the executive branch, if something is clearly an error that really visits a hardship, a disproportionate hardship on one area of the budget, isn't there any discretion at all in trying to move some things around to alleviate that? I mean, is it, there is no discretion?
Well, I'm not sure that we've ever had exactly a situation like this happen before, so I don't know. I guess the only way there is to go to the LAC. Agencies have that ability, but these boards probably never do that because they're so small. I guess the question I have is whether the $450 that was allocated to Veterans Affairs and the Fire Marshal's office is still available.
I think so.
So we'll look into that. Any other questions on this? And why don't you go on to your operating budget reductions?
Okay. The operating budget reductions requires that, I've got too many pieces of paper up here. for the 3% cut, am I in here too? Sorry. For the 3% cut, we would look at a total of $86,000. We would take that in a number of ways. About $20,000 would come out of my actually office costs. We would also reduce. Actually, it has to come out of everything. It would be $6,000 out of the training grants, $21,000 out of my grants that will go to counties, and about $20,000 out of grants that will go to non-governmental agencies. That will impact, again, the CALS program, the EMS regional programs. Their role is really to enhance and support EMS across the state. One of the things that I think is very neat about how this is structured is that there are 8 regions, because each region is very different. So they may be doing different things. It may be additional education. It may be providing equipment. It may be more training, depending on what type of services they have, more volunteer services than full-time services.
Ms. Brickmore, could I just interrupt you for a minute? I'm sorry. but I'm having difficulty finding an $86,000 on this sheet, and so I'm wondering if the sheet is wrong.
Do you have this memorandum?
Well, we're working off of this budget
because
page sheet.
I am not a health licensing board, so I'm not sure if I'm on that sheet.
Yes, you are.
Okay, I'm sorry, I have not seen it. But this memo, there's a chart, if you have that, because I believe this was provided to you. And there's two charts I think are really spell it out, probably in more detail than what's on the other chart. You have, and you'll see on the second page, that would be the reductions. Yes, that's correct. That would be the, it's an EMSRB. And on the second page, the first chart will show the reductions for fiscal year 10.
So then these sheets are not correct.
They are. I don't know what you're
doing. These sheets say 54 for operating budget reduction and 79 for grant reductions.
Senator Berglund, they
probably... Yes, in 2010 it'd be 47 in grant reductions. And then 13 in health professional services reductions.
Senator Berglund, the sheet that you do have there, it is probably correct, but the numbers are separated a little bit differently in the memo that she has. If we looked at the total adds up to the same amount. The Health Professional Services Program is not part of what Catherine is presenting in her memo, and the Health Professional Services Program will be presented at a later time here today with another executive director.
Well, even when you add these up, they don't add up to the same total that you've got on this page. So, we'll just make a note on this page that there's a discrepancy. Why don't you go on?
Okay. I'm sorry, Julia's getting a sheet for me.
Just explain all of that.
Okay, full-time salaries out of 2010 would be a $19,000. What I have found as far as doing any type of a layoff ends up being so costly that I'd end up continuing to lay people off. The cost of a layoff costs more than reducing a position. So I would propose that instead of a layoff, that I actually look at positions and start and work with the unions and look at reducing them to like a 75% position. I can do that from as little as one to three positions. I would save enough to on the salaries. They would still have the authority or the option of saying, instead, just lay me off. But laying off a position costs me about $38,000. And so just it sends you backwards. You don't save money with layoffs. So I would propose working with our association and also with staff and look at a couple positions that we could reduce where we'd still have 75% of their time. They would actually still get health insurance, which may keep them there, and I'd still have somebody being able to do the positions. I'm small enough that I don't have somebody else who can do somebody else's job. I have a lot, except for my specialist, I have one person that does licensing, one and a half people. It would reduce everything, so my only option to me would be to go 75%. We would continue to, I don't know what else to cut, because I have no out-of-state travel. I can't change my lease. I cannot reduce in-state any more than I already have, because my in-state travelers are my inspectors. And the other thing that I would do is, obviously, we have a number of grant programs that would have to be reduced again. Board compensation, I will have to hand it to my board. My board has been very good, and some folks that actually do get per diem have not claimed it recently or haven't claimed travel. We usually have two board meetings a year outstate. We are a statewide board, although we have six meetings. Four of them are in the Twin Cities. We do one in Duluth and one in Alex every year. Well, this year we did not do Duluth. The cost of taking the whole board to Duluth and renting space, we just couldn't afford it. We'd also be doing staff as well. We did do Alex. We may have to get rid of both of the outstate meetings. That is unfortunate because we do have public that comes to our meeting. I think that's a good thing for them to hear what deliberations are made by the board members. And I do have, statewide board. We have already stopped doing any board packets to our board members. They get it all sent by email, and they accrue the cost of printing it all off and bringing it with them. No one's complained about that. We would do very little mailings. If we can do something email, we can. We have an electronic licensing, so we do that, although we do have to still mail out the certificates. So that's pretty much what we have done. I don't know what else we can cut.
Any other questions for the EMS board?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brookmore, could you again explain the award, the volunteer ambulance personnel, the award of $18,000?
What the award is?
Yeah.
Okay. They reimburse the training, or they can reimburse individuals for both initial and refresher ambulance personnel. So there's training programs that do initial training for people coming into EMS, and this is for, again, volunteer, and also for the refresher courses. Again, 75% of our personnel that we do certify are volunteers in our state. So this is to retain, and we do have trouble retaining volunteers. This is a way to retain volunteers and to recruit volunteers for the services across the state.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Rosen, I think your question might have been more to the Cooper Sams Longevity Award, which is certainly more than just the training. It goes to the ability to give long-term volunteer firefighters and ambulance operators some pension, some small pension benefits, if you will. And that was a couple of years ago funded by a general fund commitment every year that is renewed, and so that has been maintained to date. And I will say this: $450,000. Just to go back to that for a minute, that had the drafting error. We wiped out the fund that had paid for this before we put the general fund in there. There was about $6 million left in this pot of money, and we had a significant deficit to take care of last year. And so as we wiped out that fund and used it for general fund purposes, we took that $450,000 and allocated it $200,000 to the veterans, the returning veterans, to be able to invest in making their skills that they learned in being veterans overseas applicable to our emergency services here in Minnesota, a really good use. And then $250,000 for the medical response unit reimbursement program, which again can help the longevity of our rural EMS operations. And so what we were doing really was, as we recognized we needed to eliminate this pot of money that had historically paid for these longevity awards, we took a small percentage of it and invested it in things that could help with the longevity. But then the $450,000 came out of the EMSRB, essentially, the way the bill was drafted. But the longevity awards still exist from a general fund allocation that supported that from the year prior. Does that help a little bit? I mean, I think I'm trying to add a little clarity. I don't know if I'm getting there or not, but that's...
They are two, Madam Chair, Senator, they are two different programs, both of them aimed at for different reasons. The ambulance reimbursement is paid out while you are serving.
Yes.
While the longevity is upon retirement, there is an award for longevity in EMS. And so that's a different pot. It's actually invested, and those investment growth continues in the program so that we can reimburse, or I should say award.
Okay, we do need to move on. Are there other questions? Okay, thank you. Monica Fielder.
Madam Chair, sorry to disappoint you in the committee. I'm not Monica Fielder. I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Dentistry. The Board of Dentistry has the responsibility as the administering agency for the Health Professional Services Program, HPSP. And Monica Fielder, the program director, is unable to be here. But what she did want you to know as far as the program goes, this is a program that is shared by all of the health boards. And what it does is assess and monitor health professionals that have various impairments, whether it's alcohol, drugs, physical impairments, emotional impairments, and assure the boards that those people are fit to practice, that they are capable of practicing in a safe way, or if they're not, then they monitor them and assure us that they are not practicing. The budget cuts or budget reductions that we're looking at for HPSP for the biennium total $34,000, and the HPSP is already facing caseloads that are 25% above the national average for each of the case managers. So additional reductions will further challenge that and increase risk to Minnesota citizens and also affect the ability of the agency or of the department to respond to reports of potential impairment. So there are some pretty strong concerns. The budget cuts will be addressed by reducing staffing and also by reducing some of the reliance upon professional contracts with experts in the field that help guide the program and provide some of the assessment expertise. So,
and is this funded by each board making a contribution to this?
That's correct. Each of the boards does make a contribution to the base funding of the program, and then each of them is billed according to the utilization of licensees or health professionals in their particular area.
And are there any fees assessed to the individuals that are being monitored?
The individuals do pay some fees for assessment in some cases, and they're also responsible for their own individual therapies and also any specimens that are required to be collected of them for the testing of those specimens to determine whether an individual is compliant with their monitoring program.
And are the fees that are paid by the individuals paid to their board or to this monitoring program?
The individuals that are being monitored are paying their fees to their own therapists or to the companies that are collecting this specimens.
I didn't mean that part. I meant, is there a fine, so to speak, assessed to them?
Typically, no, Madam Chair, there is not. And in many cases, this is done anonymously so that the board is not aware that the individual is working with HPSP. So there's a confidentiality agreement that they can have with HPSP. So as long as they are maintaining compliance with their monitoring program, the board is not informed. The board only becomes informed, aware of somebody utilizing that if there's a violation of the agreement, or if they come to the board and the board directs them to utilize HPSP in order to maintain their license.
But HPSP knows who these individuals are.
HPSP works with each of them, yes.
And they're not paying a fine to the HPSP service.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Okay, let's move on then. Julie Vagnus.
My name is Julie Vagnus, and I'm going to be presenting the budget cuts for the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy. Marriage and Family Therapy's cuts in total are going to be around $6,000, and it's roughly, I don't know, $2,000 the first year and then $4,000 the second year. The places that they've cut is just kind of spread throughout. A little bit money out of the professional technical services, which these are contracts that we write for expert witnesses when we have any complaints come in to review the activity there. These will be cut and most likely would slow down the complaint process as we resolve any complaints that are addressed with the board. The other things are their communications, and in that line item, they're hoping to no longer again mail out any kind of big documents. They'll resort to postcards and directing their licensees to renew their applications online. Currently, almost all of the health licensing boards, except two of them, have all online renewal processes, and most of them have almost close to 90% of their licensees using that online feature. So it is a huge benefit and what is able to help us maintain some of the paper mailings back and forth. Some of the other things that they will be cutting is they will currently, they'll eliminate their outstate travel. They will have no funds available to do any of outstate travel at all. And then the supplies and operations, basically, and equipment replacing, they won't be able to do anything. We're down to paper clips and pencils for this board. Currently, this board does have a budget issue already in fiscal year 10. We're roughly $12,000 short, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to make that demand by the end of June 30th. We have an opportunity where the executive director will be retiring, and we'll probably have to leave that executive director position vacant until July 1st. We had some unexpected expenses that hit us. One of the contracts with the National Testing Facility required us to draft a contract to accommodate for ADA accommodations, and that was $7,500. And so a cost like that pretty much just wiped the board out. Other than that, I think that's all I have for this board. Do you have any questions?
I don't see a reduction on out-of-state travel. I see a reduction in-state travel.
They already don't have an out-state travel budget then. I'm sorry about that. Their in-state travel, basically it's just the board members, so we would have to cut meetings, complaint meetings, and just reimburse the boards at a lower, the board members themselves.
Are there any questions then? If not, thank you. Are you going to present for the nursing home administrators also?
Yes, I will, Madam.
All right.
For the Board of Nursing Home Administrators, there's two parts to it. The actual board itself will be taking a cut of around $10,000. This board will make their cuts by having a full-time staff work part-time. They'll also reduce the first year, $2,000 in computer services. And what this means is they will not do any more maintaining or upgrading to their current services or add any additional online services. We'll stay where we are. And then supplies, basically cutting anything that we can there. The second year will be printing and professional technical services, again, reducing contracts that we would do with expert witnesses and the way that we do our mailings for that board. Any questions with that board?
What is the full-time equivalent of that board?
They have two full-time staff, and currently the entire fiscal year 9 and so far in 10, one of them has been using the governor's salary savings plan and working at like a 0.8 as opposed to the full-time. So they've been operating with a 1.8, and most likely we'll have to see if we can have the individual work even less hours down to maybe 1.75.
So it'd be a 0.5 reduction?
In total, yes.
Okay. Other questions?
The other part then to the nursing home administrators is the administrative services unit. The administrative services unit cuts are in total $67,000. And it's broken down into four different categories. Operations is $11,000 the first year and $16,000 the second year, and that will be in salaries. I will have to reduce the staff that we currently have from the full-time to a part-time equivalent. Currently, the administrative services unit has 8 full-time staff members. The second part of one of the functions of the administrative services unit is maintaining the volunteer health care provider program. The volunteer health care provider program will take a $2,000 cut the first year and a $3,000 cut the second year. What this does is this program purchases malpractice insurance to the volunteer doctors, dentists, and nurses that work at nonprofit organizations. We currently already have an issue with not having enough funding to pay for all the malpractice insurance that is requested out there. We have an operating budget of $79,000, and I asked our provider to give me an estimate of what our June 30th invoice will be, and it will be over $100,000. So we are going to have to cut some of the volunteers that are in the program that we can't pay for their malpractice insurance through it. And I know a couple of years ago we tried to fix this program in the budget, but the way the budget line was written didn't give us the authority to get additional appropriated dollars that are needed for the plan. We have about 19 different organizations that are in the clinics that are in our program, and about 48 volunteers currently registered. And it just seems to keep growing. I think the demand is individuals can't afford to go any place. They have no insurance, and so they're resorting to getting their care at the volunteer clinics.
And can you just remind me now of what the complement is of this ASU?
We have 8 full-time staff.
And with this reduction, it will be?
It will drop us down to about 7.5.
Okay, thank you.
Another part of our cuts is we had a budgeted money for retirements. Last session, what we did is we tried to calculate how many people would anticipate retiring within the boards in the 2-year time frame, and the administrative services unit received a $200,000 appropriation to cover all of those costs. And we'll take $5,000 cut out of that program in hopes that our calculations were off and some of the people that we had anticipated retiring don't retire at the time that we had identified. And then the third item under the administrative services unit is the legal cost money. A couple of years ago, there was an account set up under ASU to appropriate funds to handle legal costs associated with contested cases. So if a board runs into a situation where a contested case evolves, they currently do not have funding within their particular board's budget to cover those expenses. And in prior years, we'd have to go to the LAC and ask for a one-time appropriation to help fund expert witnesses, or most likely it's the cost to the Office of Administrative Hearings when the case is just about done. And what this account will do is it provides funding under the Administrative Services Unit, and we can then have each board that is in need of these funds to cover contested cases apply to the Administrative Services Unit and then do a transfer of those funds to their board. Now, keep in mind, anytime funds are transferred, any board that expends those funds is responsible in making sure that they've brought in sufficient revenues to cover the expenses. And so, for instance, if the Board of Chiropractic Examiners requests $100,000 to cover their contested case, once that money is spent, then their receipts coming in need to make sure that they've also covered those expenditures on top of their operational dollars. And so this account will then take a $15,000 cut the first year and a $6,000 cut the second year. It will just limit some of the funds that we have available to transfer to other boards. And that is the remainder, or completes all of these, if you have any questions.
Any questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Vagnus, can you tell me which line should I be looking at that specifically addresses the loss of medical malpractice insurance that you referenced?
Senator Lynch, Madam Chair, it's under the 2M object code, the other operating expenses. We've identified it. And I should tell you that it's only part of what's there, because some of the other line items also fill into those areas. So we've got $1,700 and then $2,600. Part of that's a malpractice, which we're saying is $2,000 and then $3,000 in there. So that would be where it would be.
So maybe you want to send us a memo to break that line down.
Okay.
Senator Lynch.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Vagnus, and in addition, if you could remind us of the overall net impact that you think that this reduction will have on that service. The reason that I'm asking the question is because it was just a few short years ago that we did have some drafting problems or clarification that was needed in order that we could ensure that coverage is available to our volunteers, and it was felt widespread across the state. So I think it's really important that we understand the magnitude of the issue at hand.
I will provide you some information on that.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions, Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair, mine were covered. And if we get that memo breaking that down, that would be helpful.
Yes. Other questions? If not, thank you very much. Robert Leach. Medical practice.
Madam Chair, I will go over their budget also. He is not here to represent his budget. The medical practice board will take a $73,000 cut the first year and a $112,000 cut the second year. They've identified the cuts to come out of the first year other benefits, which are per diems paid to their board members. They just anticipate a little bit less activity in the complaint meetings that they've held during fiscal year 10 and find that that is a reasonable assessment there. They also will cut the professional technical contracts by $13,000, and these would be contracts that are written for expert witnesses on their complaints. In-state travel will be cut, because we'll be cutting some of the meetings for board members. We'll also have the in-state travel cut at the same level. And then supplies and equipment and employee development. In those areas, employees, there will be no opportunity really for them. They have very little other employee development or dollars in their line items. So employees just will not be going to anything. That also covers our conference registrations, and so conference registrations, we won't be attending them. They also are going to cut the amount that they pay to the Attorney General's office by $9,500, and just felt that because of the activity and where we're at this part of the year, we're able to do that. For the second year, we would need to cut probably one full-time staff at $62,000, and we also are looking at the keeping the board meetings at a lower rate, so the in-state travel would be reduced, and employee development, conference registrations, and then again cutting some more money that goes to the Attorney General's office. Now, this board is a little bit different than any of the other boards. They have a partnership agreement with the Attorney General's office, so it gives them that little bit of flexibility if we have a little bit less needs for their for the Attorney General's, we are able to kind of cut that in our budget. All the other boards do not have a partnership agreement, and funds are appropriated directly from the Special Revenue Fund directly to the Attorney General's office, and we just make sure that we've brought in sufficient revenue to cover what all those expenses are for them.
Can you just remind us how much complement the Board of Medical Practice has?
They have, I believe it's 23 staff members, and so by cutting one, go down to 22.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So having this agreement with the Attorney General's office, you do feel it does save you money. Is that correct? And if that's the case, well, I know that's with medical practice, that's probably a no-brainer, but I was just going to look at what the Attorney General's office was cut in the governor's budget, and if there would be, if it would make sense to have some other agreements with some of these other boards.
I guess I'm unable to comment on that clearly. The agreement that they've done, it's been years since they went with that route of having an agreement, and it seems like the last couple of years, they haven't had the really large cases that they had about 3 or 4 years ago. So we've spent roughly whatever our agreement was. We've come in very close on that. A few years ago, we were way over our agreement, so we'd have to draft new agreements, and we're running, did not have sufficient revenue to cover that. The other boards, we try to plan and we set our budget to what we anticipate spending there and work with the Attorney General's office when they set their budget on that line item. So I'm not really sure. We can maybe get back to you to say, is there a pros or cons against having an agreement with them or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? No, thank you. Renee Cronquist.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Renee Cronquist, and I'm the Assistant Director for Practice and Policy at the Minnesota Board of Nursing. I'm not the Executive Director, but I am able to speak to our budget items. As you know, the Board of Nursing regulates nurses licensed to practice in the state of Minnesota. The vast majority of those 105,000 nurses are safe, ethical, and competent practitioners. However, because this isn't the case with all of the licensees, the board has the responsibility to investigate complaints and to take disciplinary action if necessary. In speaking to the budget, to effectuate the proposed cuts, the board anticipates a couple of cuts in a couple of areas. One would be to reduce the use of professional and technical contracts, and it has been addressed earlier. One of the components of those professional and technical contracts is utilization of expert witnesses for case review or to testify in contested case hearings. We will need to closely scrutinize the use of those expert witnesses and either look at the hourly rate that they're being assessed, minimize or reduce or eliminate contested case hearings. The other method that the board would take to effectuate the necessary cut is to eliminate a position in the disciplinary section, specifically looking at an investigator senior position. Currently, the board has approximately 31 FTE, and this would then be at 30 FTE. Currently, of course, the board does prioritize its complaints that we receive, but we anticipate that with the cut of this position, some of our most egregious complaints will be delayed in their processing. Given the direct contact that nurses have with patients, the board has an obvious concern with risk to the public with needing to effectuate that cut. I'm very happy to answer questions specific to the other items or any other questions that you might have.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
Madam Chair, maybe Ms. Cronquist, you could give us some idea of, there's $5,000 for other benefits. There's in-state travel, and then you cut in 11, $15,000 for out-of-state travel. And I'm just, why wouldn't you move that up into 10, or if you could give me some idea. I understand supplies, I get kind of get equipment, but other benefits is pretty vague, and if you could give me some idea of what's going on.
In terms of in-state travel, the board anticipates that that would be reducing board member travel compensation by, in addition to board meetings, board members travel to the board offices to participate in complaint review panels, and we try to distribute that responsibility equitably among all of the board members. What we'll be looking to do is rely more heavily on our metro board members. That's one component. The other is staff need to travel out to various locations to review nursing programs throughout the state and to give presentations throughout the state. Those will be, the presentations will likely be eliminated. The site visits will be very carefully planned to cluster them. In terms of the out-of-state travel, I apologize that I can't speak to that with great certainty. I anticipate that it's because these cuts are on unexpected dollars, so our out-of-state travel, I think, has already happened in this year. And so we would have the full fiscal year for in 11 that there would be essentially little to no out-state travel. Some of the out-of-state travel that board members or board staff participate in is reimbursed by a national organization. So it's not all a direct cost, but the things that are a cost would be, as they say, eliminated or reduced.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Cronquist, this is so, but this $15,000, so you've spent a similar amount this year on out-of-state travel, just expended it, so, or in 10, I'm sorry. And so this $15,000 represents money that has not been reimbursed by a national organization.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that would be the case. And I do apologize that I don't know the specific numbers that are allotted to our out-of-state budget line item, but we will get that information to you. Ms. Vangsness assisted me with the category of other benefits. That speaks to the point I made earlier about board member per diem. Again, by reducing the utilization of our board members for complaint review panels, that's where that savings would come from.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much. Angela Barnes.
Madam Chair and the committee, I'm Angelina Barnes, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Psychology. The Minnesota Board of Psychology is currently comprised of 10 members and has a staff of 7 full-time employees, 1 temporary worker, and 2 part-time employees. We currently license doctoral level licensed psychologists, and our current appropriation is $806,000. We, in anticipation of the 3% cut in fiscal year 2010, we are looking at reducing full-time salary by $13,907. I'd like to speak a little bit to our salary situation. We do have 4 vacant positions currently at our board. One is an assistant executive director, 2 are OAS or office administrative specialists, and 1 is also an OAS, but it's a licensure specialist to us. All 4 of those positions are meant to serve our licensure unit at this time. The assistant executive director is the only position that does have supervisory responsibilities within our agency and would have more diversified duties, but they were specifically intended to work in the licensure unit and to ease some of the burden in the licensure unit. Currently, I only have 1 full-time person working in licensure. The work level that we have is for approximately 3 full-time employees. She is handling all of our licensure currently, and I don't anticipate being able to help her in that area. There is a possibility that we could get 1 more licensure specialist because we do have a couple extra positions, but the reason I bring up those extra positions is because historically in the past, the board has pulled from that area of salaries. They've pulled for it for a continuing education seminar that was put on for the public and for licensees to attend at no cost to the licensees. So that was used for that. We will no longer be able to do a continuing education for the board.
So your presentation isn't making it clear what this column shows in terms of reductions in FTEs.
Let me be more clear. The full-time salary is $13,900. That's part of our reduction. $878 is for overtime pay, and $1,051 is for outstate travel. That totals $15,837 in fiscal year 2010. My point is that there were unbudgeted items that the board covered in the past that were pulled from that salary. So while it may look like the $13,907 is only a fraction of one full-time position, there are other areas impacted that weren't in our budget. This CE.
So how much of a position is it that you're eliminating?
It's approximately a quarter of a position. I guess my only point was that there are other areas that weren't included in our budget. For example, if you don't have it in front of you, but if you were to look at our budget overall, $0 were budgeted for computers this year in fiscal year 2010. $0 were budgeted for repairs. Approximately and historically throughout the past, computers have cost us $32,000. I can only assume, being the new executive director, that that money was supposed to come out of those salaries. Now that we've cut into the salaries, it impacts the other things that we have to do because these things were not planned for or budgeted for prior to my coming on board.
Are there any other questions? If not, thank you very much. I think we're going to have to try to finish the others that we didn't get to on Thursday. We'll take them up at the beginning of our agenda before we start the human services budget. Thank you very much, members. The meeting's adjourned.